Welcome to America's Jobs Team. At Consultant Connect, we believe the greatest force for change is a job, but it requires amazing, talented economic developers. Each week, we will go deep with America's jobs heroes on their leadership journeys, with the belief that when leaders get stronger, their communities thrive.
Welcome, everyone, to the America's Jobs Team, powered by Consultant Connect and sponsored by Research on Investment. On today's episode, we are going to hear from Brian Farlow, who's a partner at the Arrowhead Site Selection Group. He really focuses most of his work and energy on foreign direct investment consulting for companies that are really looking to enter the U.S. market, which is pretty exciting. He has a very unique background and just a very specialized focus, which is really awesome. He's recruited companies. He worked in economic development and business development for several years. He has recruited companies that have invested over $2 billion into the U.S. economy. And one of the things that I found really fascinating after talking to Brian is just how he got into this business. It's about to blow your mind. So tune in to Brian Farlow. Hey, everyone. This is Carla, and welcome to another episode of the America's Jobs Team, powered by Consultant Connect. I am really delighted to have Brian Farlow on the call with us today. And Brian has not only become a great friend in this business, but is just a really good source of information and a really stand-up guy to be around, very knowledgeable. And I just really hope that the listening audience gets a chance to hear from Brian, learn about Brian, and also learn from Brian. So Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you asking me to do this.
Yeah, well, it is my pleasure. So we're going to dive right in. And I first, you know, people end up in the site consultant slash economic development professions, usually a little bit haphazardly. And one of my favorite things is learning how people's journey has landed them to where they are now. So I'm wondering, what was your plan when you went to college? And how did you end up where you are?
Well, I had a kind of an evolving plan. I was one of those not exactly a four-year undergrad guy. I enjoyed my time. But when I first went to college, I went on a music scholarship and I was an opera singer. And I thought that was what I was going to do. And then I realized I was good, but not that good. And so when I transferred to Tennessee Wesleyan here in Athens, I shifted my focus to a BA in theology. And I was going to be an Episcopal priest and an army chaplain. Wow. And I shattered my ankle. That didn't work out. And tried real hard not to be my dad, who I grew up in this business. He's been in it for 40 years. And I tried being a teacher. Apparently, I'm a little too blunt for some parents. That's what the principal said. And my first gig was in workforce development just because it was the first people that would hire me. I started trying to get a real job in 2008. I was a manager of a river guide outpost for a few years after college, too. And I was good at spending federal dollars, got promoted through there to be a regional planner. So I used to plan industrial parks and recreational parks, and then got on with ECD as a regional guy in Chattanooga doing expansions like that. Got right place, right time for some really big expansions in the Chattanooga region, and got promoted to Nashville, and that's where I really got into recruitment and the business development side of economic development. I just fell in love with it.
That is so awesome. Now, when I asked you that question, I didn't know the answer, but I am 100% fascinated by the fact that you started in opera, went on to ministry, and have, you know, taken a little stint in education and now have found your way to economic development slash, you know, site consulting work, which is what you do now. That is just a great story. Okay, so let's talk about bosses. When you think about bosses that you've had, is there a favorite that kind of stands out in your mind? And why does that person, when you think about like, man, I either learned a lot or, you know, just really enjoyed their leadership style, what was that thing that really stood out to you?
You know, there's two people that come to mind, but for the same reasons. Patsy Hazelwood was my first ECD boss, and then Randy Boyd was my second ECD commissioner. But they both had similar leadership styles, which just really I gravitated to. It was, they put you out there, said it's your show, figure you out, and they let you try things. And if it didn't work, their response was more or less of, well, now we know it doesn't work. Move on to something else. And those two really showed me what it was like to find my style, because we all have our own different styles of how we do things. I mean, I'm a borderline introvert. So I can turn on the extrovert when I need to, but being able to discover my own way of doing things, my own way of approaching projects and people was just invaluable. And like I said, they really, really were strong proponents for exploration. Like, try something new. Because, you know, economic development's one of those fields where there's a lot of old school stuff that still works, and I still do them. But there's a lot of new school stuff that either hasn't been thought of yet or is just being adapted now. And so it was great having those two leaders that were just like, you know, go and do. If it works, great. Keep doing it. If it doesn't, you know, we learn and move on. And that's kind of how I do things now.
Yeah, I really like you, you know, just even referencing the fact that in leadership, you have to find your own style. And I think especially when you're beginning to start out in a new career, or if you changed careers and are, you know, just learning a new profession, that ability to, as some people would say, like, fail fast, like, get out there, try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But to find your style and to kind of get into a rhythm is so important. And it's hard as a leader to, like, let people fail fast. But it's so important.
It is important, because part of it is, especially when I was younger, and I still like to think I'm young, even though I've been reminded I'm not. It's one of those things where it's hard to mimic someone else's style for too long without, you have to have a part of you in it. I mean, one of the reasons why I enjoy business development so much, and just about every company that I've ever worked with, I'm still close with today, is because what you see is what you get. The way I'm talking with you is the way I talk with them. I mean, they get Brian. That's it. I don't try to have any false pretenses. It's just who I am. But I was able to learn how to do that under Patsy and Randy. And I also got real lucky. My first coworker, Blake Poole, man, I've never seen somebody work a room like that man. He could shake everybody's hands in a room and everybody could tell you they loved him. So I got to learn how to be social. He taught me a lot about how to be social in a professional setting and float and not get stuck in one conversation, which is easy to do in this field.
It sure is. So when you think about, you know, your leadership today, I know we're all still facing challenges as we continue to grow and evolve as leaders. What are some of the things that you're facing in your own leadership? And is there anything that you're doing to kind of overcome those challenges?
You know, one of the things that I've always had a problem with, and is sometimes I'm quick to say, no, not a good idea, which is ironic given the way I've came up in the industry, but it's just that I've seen so much work and so much not work. And so sometimes for me, it's stepping back and letting that person discover why that method doesn't work that well, instead of telling them. It's more of, because it's the way I learn. I mean, some of the best lessons I learned are from my most colossal failures. But yeah, that's been my conscious effort, is to, when I see something about to go off the rails, I'll let it for a little bit, you know, not to where it can't be recovered, but just partly to also to see how people recover. Is sometimes some people just shut down in a panic mode, but some really good folks will, younger folks will just, oh, well, that's not working. Let's readjust. And it's neat to see that. And if I step in and say, okay, hold on, let's get this back on track, I would have robbed them of that experience.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, when I was saying earlier, it's really hard as a leader to do. I found it to be really hard in something that you really have to, like, consciously be aware of and working for every day, because it's really easy to step in and say, like, oh, I see this happening and we need to make an adjustment. But if we're always doing that, the team doesn't even begin to look for those moments. And so you have to, you know, let people experience some things and try some things, which can be really hard as a leader, because sometimes we've tried them and they haven't worked, and you have to just decide what are the times to say, oh, nope, we've done that before, let's not go down that road again, and what times to say, like, okay, let's try it again and see, maybe it was just a timing, you know, or, you know, maybe just for that one project it didn't work. So I find that to be really hard too.
I'm glad you mentioned the team setting, because, you know, that's a different style too, because when you're leading a team and you've got your team leader who's, you know, potentially going off the rail, if you jump in too soon, sometimes you miss an opportunity to learn something new, especially from some of these younger generations, because I'm borderline a dinosaur when it comes to technology. But, like, sometimes a first year person will come up with this idea, and at first it just sounds bizarre, but when you sit down and think about it, like, oh, that might actually work. You know, so it allows the team to also gel if you just step back and let it happen.
Yeah. So when you think about what recharges you and like what renews you when you've either had a bad day or you just know you need a little bit of time off, like what are the things that you kind of go to as your guilty pleasures or like time to, you know, regroup?
So that's a seasonal answer. So in the winter, as you know, I'm a pretty avid duck hunter. I just like being out there. And being a hunter in East Tennessee, we don't shoot much, but I see some beautiful sunrises. And spring and summer, I'm a big golfer. I tend to gravitate to quieter settings to recharge. And then, but sometimes it's just sitting on the back porch with a cigar and my dogs, just being quiet and listening to everything going around me.
Is there a leadership professional or some type of celebrity that you are, you know, you're like their biggest follow, like you are fanboy for that person?
I don't really follow celebrities or really care. I kind of view celebrities as their job is to entertain me. When I go to movies, I'm not one that, I don't want to be challenged. I just want to be entertained. That's why I love Marvel movies. Plenty of bright, shiny things that capture my attention. But when it comes to people I look up to, it's more of people in this profession because it's practical. They've been there. They've done that. There's a guy here in Cleveland that pretty much taught me everything I know about land use. There's a gentleman here in Cleveland, Tennessee, who pretty much taught me everything I know about land use management and being absolutely true to yourself. And when you talk to him, oh, he's very country, let's just say that, but he's incredibly knowledgeable and he knows what he's doing. He's been there, he's done that, and he's one of the ones I really look up to. And there's another gentleman, again, early on in my career that just really took me under his wing, fantastic guy, and it's people like that that I look up and try to emulate because they're real world people. Like I can call them, I can talk to them. I mean, I love Dwayne Johnson, but probably not going to go hang out with him anytime soon.
Right. So speaking of Marvel movies, which I'm also a fan of, if you had to declare one superpower that you have, what would that superpower be? Just kind of a fun question.
You know, honestly, I think it would be similar to Captain America's. It's not necessarily a strength or anything like that, but just his sense of right and wrong. And if it's wrong, just don't do it no matter the cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an awesome one.
When I grew up with, you know, James Bond, Indiana Jones, Captain America was my first and favorite childhood action star. And, you know, between G.I. Joe's Captain America, it's one of those where it's not right, probably shouldn't do it.
So have you ever done rapid fire before?
I have not, but I have, but it was usually in college.
Okay, so we're going to test your rapid fire skills, which basically means I'm going to throw out a really quick statement / question, and you're going to answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. You don't have to describe it unless there's a really good story behind it, but just what is the first thing that comes to your mind? Are you ready?
Fire away.
Okay. What is your favorite color?
Blue.
Would you like tacos or pizza?
Pizza.
Text or call?
Either.
Ooh. Digital or print news?
For convenience, digital, but I still like the whole paper.
Last book you read?
Dr. Sleep by Stephen King.
First car?
1996 Honda Accord four-door sedan.
Favorite band in high school? Be careful, you might date yourself.
This one predates me a little bit, but it was also the first concert I ever saw with Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band. I'm a big Parrothead.
Ah, nice. Guilty pleasure TV show.
Oh, God. Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates.
And then movie that you could watch over and over and over again.
Pretty much anything with James Bond, Indiana Jones, or with the Marvel movies. I don't have just one, but yeah, James Bond, Indiana Jones, or Marvel.
Action guy. I get it.
Yep.
Okay. So that wraps up the rapid fire. And Brian, it has been a delight to have you on the podcast. And thank you so much for sharing your insights and just a little bit about your journey. I think it's a fascinating story. I'm still trying to get over the fact that opera to ministry to teaching to economic development was the path. When I said people get here in kind of very interesting ways, I didn't see your pathway being that. And it took me by surprise. But I love that about you. And I think it's a really cool story.
Well, I've lived a random enough life. There's not many people I can't associate with.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Carla, I heard Consultant Connect had a baby last year. You know, there's been a lot of rumors about babies going on, but, you know, when we talk about the Consultant Connect baby, it really is a dream and almost more of an adoption, because we have been doing these small groups for a while. And the listening audience has heard us talk about a Next, Thrive, a CEO group that previously was called Engage. There's so many of these small groups that we're meeting, and we decided last year, and hence when we had the baby, to merge all of these into one event. And I am, out of everything we're doing this year, I am the most excited about this event, because what an incredible opportunity to network in small groups with other small groups, with leaders at multiple different levels of an organization, with years of experience, in a really powerful way. So C2 University is the Consultant Connect baby of 2020. It's happening on July 28th and 29th here in Kalamazoo, Michigan, because that's our home. And when you have a baby, you like to be at home.
It's someone who would know about that, both you and I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had babies. It's you got a nest for a while, and Kalamazoo is a great place. So we encourage everybody to check it out. It's really exciting. You just can go to www.c2university.com. Ask Nick or I questions. We're going to be talking about it a lot more, how you sign up for the event, but also, perhaps more importantly, find your small group within the event, because this is a small group model, even though we're all going to be together for part of the event as well.
Hey, so a lot of people that have been to Economics, our annual conference, or maybe at one of our other Consultant Connect events, have heard our leader, Ron Kitchens, speak on a number of different subjects as far as leadership goes. And several have asked how Ron could come to their community and help them in their leadership. So I brought in Faye, who can help with that.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So Ron loves coming to your communities. Ron loves to share his leadership lessons. And if you have any desire to bring him into your community, to have him share his lessons and influence and inspire your community, just reach out to me. You can email me at Faye, that is F-A-Y-E, @consultantsconnect.org. And I'm happy to chat with you a little bit more about what that looks like, what the costs are involved with that, and to pick a great time for him to come visit with you.
Hey, everyone, this is Faye Davis. I am here today with Brad McDull for our 60 Seconds of the Site Consultant. Hey, Brad, everybody talks about site readiness. What in your mind makes a site, quote unquote, ready?
That's a great question, Faye. I think when we do corporate site selection for our clients, whether it be an office user or an industrial user, I think we're really talking about site readiness for an industrial user. And then it's going to really depend on, when you talk about site readiness, as to what the user is actually doing on the site. If it's a warehouse user, it's going to have a different meaning as site readiness versus, you know, heavy manufacturer. So understanding kind of that not all sites fit all users is going to be the first thing you have to identify when you talk about site readiness. But for my clients, site readiness is really understanding what we can lay out on the site. What is a net buildable acreage? What is a current environmental? Who owns the site? Remember that not all owners are not all sellers, and kind of how we're going to be able to get product into the site, so ingress, egress. Also, you know, if a owner has or a community has an understanding as to what the soil conditions, the environmental, those are always a positive. But it's really nice to know where the utilities are coming from and where the entry point on the utilities are. Those are really great attributes as well. So, you know, pad ready is usually the great answer. You know, it's going to be quick, but it doesn't always have to be pad ready. But really, most importantly, my clients want to know when they can put a shovel in the ground and when they can start going and where everything is. So to me, that's site readiness. And again, all projects are going to not be the same equally. So I wouldn't, you know, a shell building versus or a spec building, you know, versus raw dirt will have different meanings for different type of users. But the most important thing is to have all the information about the site, current and up to date if possible. And most importantly, understand your timelines. The biggest fallback on site selection is governmental permitting processes. So know exactly when we can put a shovel in the ground, and if you can, how long the process is going to take, and if there's any height restrictions or truck restrictions and so on and so forth, and have an idea of like I said earlier, where the utilities are coming in and also where the roads are coming in. To me, wow, that's site readiness.
Yeah, that's great insight. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Hey, I'm here today with Stephen Jast of Gazelle AI. Steve, we hear a lot about being data-driven and the emergence of AI, that's artificial intelligence. What do these concepts really mean to economic development professionals?
Yeah, thanks. Great question, Nick. Our mission has always been to help economic development organizations win projects. We saw three major challenges that most economic development professionals face relating to budget, staffing, and time. AI can help EDOs become more successful by processing millions of data points to uncover expanding companies, and that's exactly what Gazelle AI was built to do. Without the use of AI, generating this kind of intelligence would be impossible.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. You know, if you would like more information, please feel free to email Steve at sjast, that's S-J-A-S-T, at gazelle.ai.
Wow, that was a great conversation with Brian. And as I promised, his way into this business was sure to rock your world. And it was a great story. I hope you enjoyed hearing from him. Tune in again next week. We have another episode where we'll be diving deep on the personal leadership journey of one of our fellow economic development warriors. We'll see you then.